It's the Locked On Podcast Network. Local experts on the biggest stories.
You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
It's Locked On Vikings on the Locked On Podcast Network. It's the 423rd episode. Your hosts, yours truly, Sam Ekstrom, at Sam Ekstrom on Twitter, covering the Vikings, zonecoverage.com. The co-host, Sage Rosenfels, on Twitter, at SageRosenfels18, the former NFL and, more specifically, Vikings quarterback. Sage, good morning to you. The last day of May. It sounds sort of tropical where you are, honestly. I hear some birds chirping. It sounds like a beautiful day.
I'm just on deck. It's supposed to be about 90 here today in Omaha, and I'm actually throwing a big party tomorrow, and it's supposed to be 97 tomorrow for my fundraiser. Luckily, it's from 6 to 10 at night, and we'll be 8, so it won't be quite as hot.
That's awesome. You know, the great thing about the Midwest is that even when you get these 97-degree days, the mornings are still delightful, and the evenings are very comfortable. There's about a seven-hour kind of ugly spot during the day where it's stifling, but it always cools down overnight, and you always get those evenings to enjoy. So we get into some more OTAs talk here on Locked On Vikings. The Vikings had an open practice yesterday. Kirk Cousins looking strong, looking like a leader. He talked about that yesterday, and people are speaking very highly about him. But, you know, it feels to me like this is the time of year where, for Cousins, it's more about getting in the classroom, developing a rapport with his coaches, figuring out what they want, figuring out what kind of routes his receivers like. And to me, this time of year is really building that mental chemistry as much as anything, isn't it?
It is, and it's also just a lot of reps, you know, reps with less stress. You know, the summertime, it's not as intense as, say, training camp or you know, during the season. It's less stressful. So it's that time to go out there and just work and not worry so much about the results right now, but sort of understand that the offense and the timing, all those things are works in progress, and you start to learn things over time about your wide receivers, about your tight ends. You know, Cousins has to learn what these guys can all do. You don't realize that every receiver has different skill sets. Obviously, we know what Adam Thielen can do. We know what Stephon Diggs can do, Kyle Rudolph. But Cousins has to get used to, you know, understand that, you know, Rudolph obviously can go for the jump ball type plays, and Stephon Diggs actually, you know, it gets vertical more than people realize. And you know, what's the angle of how Adam Thielen comes out on a slant route? You know, every receiver is a little bit different, and this is that time of year to, you know, just based off all these extra reps you get during the OTAs, to sort of build that rapport with those guys, that timing, and understand how these guys run routes, how they come out of their breaks, much less just getting that offense down so much where it, you know, like the back of your hand before you go into training camp.
Let me ask you this. Like, let's take a position, say the secondary, for instance, where you've got a bunch of returning starters in that area who know the defense already, but you've also got undrafted free agents. You've got guys from rookie camp who are learning it for the first time. So when you're in these meetings with these position coaches, are they basically starting from square one, even though a lot of the veterans already know this stuff? Are they basically starting over, going down to the basics this time of year?
Yeah, that's right. They do. They start over completely. And, you know, Mike Krzyzewski in his book years ago wrote, you know, every season is like a lifetime, and you really do start from zero and you work your way up. But, you know, Gary Kubiak in his sort of installation process, he had a 9-day installation process. And day one was, you know, these basic pass plays, probably, you know, 30 basic pass plays in day one with these basic running plays, maybe only, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 running plays, very basic stuff. Day two builds onto that. Day three, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Day four might be, you know, all red zone type plays. You build this thing up through usually 9-10 days of sort of installation, getting through that playbook slowly but surely, you know, adding motions, adding more shifts, just adding new concepts every single day. But yeah, the first day, even 2 days of the OTAs and really even training camp, a lot of times they sort of go back to training camp and you almost do the same thing. But those first couple of days for a veteran can almost be a little boring. And you have to sort of, you know, a good head coach will tell his players, like, listen, I know it's, you guys know this stuff like the back of your hand, but, you know, see if it's, try to learn it like it's the first time. Try to find the little details and learn something new every single time, rather than just going out there and going, I already know this stuff. Try to find something new that you didn't know before. Maybe, you know, understand some information from a different position, so you understand what everyone's doing on the field and how the whole, you know, puzzle fits together. But yeah, starting off right away, it's very basic offense versus very basic defense. The offense may only see two coverages on the first team, maybe cover two and man-to-man, and that's it.
Because this is such an educational time of year, it's all about instructing and learning. Do you think the true evaluation process hasn't really started yet? Does that wait until training camp? Like, if a guy's making a few mistakes, does he have a little more grace in OTAs than he would maybe in July or August with the coaches?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's definitely, you know, they're not in a huge hurry to get everything perfect right now. You know, they understand that, you know, players, you can't play football well unless you know exactly what you're doing. So if you're still learning in this process of what your responsibilities are, what you're supposed to do, you're not going to be able to play as fast as what you'd like to play. And the coaches understand that. They are looking for, I would say in particular, at, you know, places like defense or wide receiver. They're looking for guys who, you know, maybe they don't know what they're doing exactly yet, but they but physically they show some things. You know, they physically, something, you know, jumps out at you. You know, a great catch, some sort of a natural physical talent that, you know, maybe nobody saw going into the draft, and then, you know, they found a guy in free agency. So they're looking for those sort of physical attributes as far as, hey, look, you know, look at this kid. He's our, you know, he's 10th or 11th on our wide receiver depth chart, but man, he showed us a couple things today. He doesn't know what he's doing yet, but he showed us a couple of things today that, you know, we could build off of. Maybe this is a kid that could end up on the practice squad. So, yeah, you know, the scouts are there. You know, everyone's looking to see, you know, how guys are going to, you know, grow and improve and get better as these OTAs go on. And, you know, as a player, you really have to go and make use of every one of these practices because, you know, they're extremely important. And for a guy like me who was a backup my whole career, these practices were, you know, the sort of the start of how I made the team. You know, these OTAs, I treated just like a training camp practice. They're extremely important. I sort of had to get psyched up for each one of them. I never took any for granted. And that's how you make the team. You have to be on your P's and Q's as much as you can. And as a young player, there's a lot of information that you're learning. And the quicker you can learn it and understand it, the faster you'll play on the field when it matters.
He's Sage. I'm Sam. It's Locked On Vikings. So help us shed a little light maybe on this Anthony Barr situation. So he comes to practice yesterday and he says that he last week missed because he was getting an injury insurance policy. So from what we know, he's going to be worth, you know, $35 million guaranteed or $30 million guaranteed, a pretty high number on his next contract. Do you know what an insurance policy like that, how is it structured? What do you have to pay to insure yourself, you know, with that much money? What do you know about that situation?
Well, I know a little bit. There's a guy named Big Daddy, Rich Salgado. He lives out in Long Island. He's actually a big Giants fan. He's pretty friendly with the team. You'll occasionally see him on like Fox News in the morning. When they're talking about the Super Bowl or something NFL related, he'll go on there. He owns an insurance company, and this is what he does. This is sort of one of the main things he does is he insures athletes from all different things. Obviously, athletes need insurance for their home, this, that, and the other, but they also need insurance for their body. And so, yeah, he figures out what their, you know, future contract could look like, and or future earnings could look like, and then you insure different aspects of their body or their entire body or whatever it might be. It's not cheap. I guess it's very expensive, but a guy like Anthony Barr, he might pay, let's just say $300,000-$400,000 for this, you know, insurance policy, which sounds crazy. But when you're talking about, you know, if he gets hurt, he's going to lose out on a $50 million or $70 million contract. You know, that's a pretty good investment. So, you know, that 300,000, it's sort of like the cost of doing business. Sometimes you got to pay to insure yourself something down the line. So I'm sure once he did that, it made him feel much better about, you know, going to practice and going into the season and risking injury, because if he does get hurt, he will still be guaranteed a pretty good chunk of change.
And then if he does get hurt, then he has to file some sort of claim, and then the insurance company, I assume, is going to be, you know, face-palming, because then they have to pay out whatever, an eight-figure type payment. Is that kind of how it works then?
Yeah, it just depends on what, you know, how much he's spending to how much he might get in return. You know, some insurance policies, it has to be for, you know, basically full disability. You know, you tore your knee out so bad you can never play football again. I recall Zach Thomas when I was with the Dolphins. He got an insurance policy for the next year's contract just based off of he had fewer tackles. I mean, if he had injuries that he missed time and his statistics were down, that might cause him to sort of not make the salary that he was, you know, wanting to get next year, that it was guaranteeing that. So, you know, again, it's a way for players to sort of protect themselves, because the NFL, they can cut you each year, very different than the NBA or baseball, where they have guaranteed contracts. And so usually I think it's, especially a position like linebacker, it's money well spent.
Obviously it's spendy, so maybe not everybody can afford it, but do you think that more than 50% of guys in his situation do this, or do you think it's less common?
I think it's really common when you're in this exact situation. Obviously, it's become more common when these guys are coming out of college, because in college you're not making any money. And actually, the school will insure you to a certain amount. I know, like Iowa State this last year, I was talking to the athletic director, they had taken out insurance policies on three Iowa State players to protect the players. I think it's very common when guys are sort of like in bar situation coming up to the end of their contract, and sort of allow them to, you know, sort of play freely without being too concerned about the risk of injury. Because if you're sitting there worried about it getting injured all year, you're definitely not going to have the type of production that you need to get that huge contract.
Interesting stuff on sort of the business aspect of sports. Last segment of the day, it's our final division, where we project the over-unders based on the line set about 1 month ago. We've got the AFC West remaining. Sage, you've been getting really good at this exercise. We'll see if you can run the table again. How about the Kansas City Chiefs? They go from Alex Smith and 10 wins now to Patrick Mahomes, the raw second-year passer. We don't really know what to expect. Everybody hopes he's going to be good. I think there's signs that he's going to be good, but we really don't know yet. What do you think about Andy Reid in Kansas City?
I'll tell you what, I was a huge Alex Smith fan, and, you know, he wasn't fancy, but the guy knew how to win, 10 or 11 football games, it seemed like, every single year. So, and Mahomes is, you know, he's like sort of the opposite. He's the guy, the young guy with all the talent, but, you know, has never really gone out there and won football games like this. And really, at Texas Tech, you know, they weren't winning national championships or anything either. Their record was usually just hovering above 500 for the most part when he was there. So I don't see Mahomes quite ready yet. It's a very good division. I really like this division. And, I see them as probably an 8.5 win football team. I think they're going to be down a little bit than where they were in the past.
Yeah, very close. 7.5 is the number, so a little below 500, and I think some of this is going to be dependent upon how does the rest of the division do. Can Denver take a step forward? Can Oakland take a step forward from where they were at last year? Oakland was, I think, pretty disappointing. Where do you think Oakland is at this year after winning just 6 a year ago? Derek Carr, the Oakland Raiders. Your thoughts?
Well, here's just, by the way, speaking of with Kansas City, by the way, I mean, they've been winning 10, 11 games, it seems like, consistently when Alex Smith is there, and all of a sudden he leaves, and boom, they're down to 7.5 as their estimate as far as wins. And so, you know, who knows if this is the right move or not to move on from Alex Smith. The Oakland Raiders, I got to think they're an improved football team. Just 2 years ago, would they win 12 games, 11 games, I feel like?
Yeah.
A couple of years ago. So I feel like they're closer to that than they are to a 6-win ball club. So I'm going to go with 8.5. I'm going to go with 8.5 for the Raiders.
You got it. 8.5 is absolutely correct, which would be about a little above 500 and probably put them in competition in December to maybe win that division. If you have to take care of Bernie, we'll allow it. Maybe Bernie wants to opine on the podcast.
Bernie's very, very excited to go for his morning walk.
Yep, my pup is too. That's always the favorite part of the day for sure. How about the Denver Broncos, Case Keenum at the helm? They won 5 games last year. I think they're really hoping for a pretty gargantuan leap forward. Denver, your thoughts?
Yeah, I do think they take a leap forward. I think they've upgraded their quarterback position, which was the most important position, and was sort of a downfall for them last year. Their defense is still going to be pretty dang good. I see them as a 7.5 win ball club.
And you got it exactly. Denver 7.5, and is that puts three teams within a game of each other based on these projections, and it leaves the San Diego. I'm never going to get that right. The Los Angeles Chargers.
They should go back to San Diego, in my opinion. They should have never left.
So do you think they would project San... I almost did it again. Do you think Los Angeles is projected to be above that group of 7.5 and 8.5 or below it?
I think above it. A lot of teams are having San Diego as, they were one of the hottest teams in the NFL at the end of the season last year. A lot of people have San Diego as this sort of hot team and we'll have a chance to maybe win the AFC this year. I'm not sure if I see that, but I do see them as an improved football team. I'm going to put them at 9.5.
And Sage gets it again. Los Angeles, 9.5, the projected winners of the AFC West. So now that we've gone through all of it, let's try to sort of just circle back quickly and see what the tail of the tape was. So they've got San Diego. That's the eighth time I've done it already. Los Angeles.
I love it.
Los Angeles winning the AFC West. They've got the Patriots winning the AFC East, Pittsburgh winning the AFC North, and the AFC South. It wasn't Indianapolis. Was it Jacksonville? I think it might have been Jacksonville.
It might have been Jacksonville. I'm not sure.
And Houston.
The Texans.
They have Houston and Jacksonville tied at 9.5. So they really like Deshaun Watson there. And then obviously the Vikings they had, I think, tying with Green Bay in the NFC North. Philadelphia winning the NFC East. Falcons winning the NFC South. And the West, they had San Francisco, I think. San Francisco and Seattle tying. So there you have it, the over-unders for each division. We did it over the span of a couple weeks. Sage, good show. We'll talk to you again soon. And OTAs continue on for the Vikings as we move into June.
Sounds good. Looking forward to covering the rest of these OTAs.
All right. Enjoy that morning walk. Enjoy that backyard party in your beautiful home. And we'll talk to him again soon. He's Sage Rosenfels at Sage Rosenfels 18. I'm Sam Ekstrom at Sam Ekstrom on Twitter. Listen on LockedOnVikings.com or iTunes. Thanks a lot, everybody.